Welcome to the College Game Day Podcast, March Madness Edition. I'm your host, not nearly with as good of hair as Reese Davis, not nearly with the pocket square collection. He may actually have like a house behind his house with just pocket squares in them. Reese Davis is off tonight, and I am joined by the great Jeff Borzello, watching six games right now and recalculating KenPom in front of him. Off of a weekend of four straight days, the beautiful binge of March Madness. Jeff, welcome to the College Game Day Podcast.
Yeah, excited to be here. I'm doing my best to replace Reese's hair as his substitute for the day.
Yeah, Reese would actually have an opinion on your hair. I really don't. So, yeah, I'm sure he will be listening here through. We have some bad hot takes that Reese and I had on our last pod that we will get to. But Jeff, as we've discussed intermittently the last few days, for as glorious as the NCAA tournament is, and for as glorious as the Oakland story and the Yale story and all these stories, there is one story in college basketball looming over it all right now, a big, dark, blue cloud, and that is the future of John Calipari at Kentucky. So we have to start there. I feel like there's really nowhere else to start. And I guess as the Oakland game, as they're holding on, as you see sort of that look of angst on Cal's face, and there were some great looks, the really rich people behind the Kentucky bench, they all just looked like mortified. It was like they had collectively seen ghosts. So as this is unfolding, what's your visceral reaction to John Calipari's future at Kentucky at that point?
That it was going to be a very noisy next few days in Lexington. I mean, it's just, and you heard the whispers kind of all season, even leading up to the tournament when they were playing well, that there were still a segment of people, of Kentucky fans and Kentucky people, that weren't happy with Cal, and an early exit, you know, was going to put him, you know, back in the crosshairs. And it's, you're thinking, okay, well, they're a three seed. They're playing really well. They're playing Oakland. An early exit's not going to happen. And then it happens. And it's just almost right away, it just, you know, things start snowballing. You know, everybody's talking about his buyout and how much he has left on his contract and who could they hire if he leaves, and you know, do they fire him tonight? It's just, it was very predictable. You knew as soon as they lost in the fashion they lost in, you know, in another upset where their freshmen don't play well, you immediately knew the narratives, you immediately knew the storylines. And then he didn't help himself in the press conference. At least I don't think he did, by basically saying, you know, hey, maybe we don't need to go in the portal. Maybe we do. And, you know, college basketball suddenly got old, which, you know, it didn't really suddenly get old. It's been happening for 4 or 5 years now.
He was oddly upbeat too, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, it was. I mean, the players seemed just kind of distraught about it.
Sure.
But yeah, it's so it was kind of a you know, one thing after another that night that you kind of just saw coming, as Reed Sheppard missed a shot, as Dillingham missed a shot, as every goalkeeper three pointer went in, you just kind of saw all this stuff coming.
Yeah, and I think we're in for a fascinating 72-hour stretch here, because I feel like if he comes back, and it may not be 72 hours, it could be a couple of weeks, and we will get to potential Cal destinations and then potential Cal replacements as we go on here, because they're all fascinating. Like, all these questions are fascinating and very expensive. Like you said, $33 million is the buyout. As of late Sunday night, Jeff, do you think there's a chance John Calipari gets fired by Kentucky this week?
I think there's a chance. I don't think it's very likely. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a chance. And like I said, I mean, there's been people that have not been happy with him for a couple of years, and he's, you know, publicly, you know, taken shots or taken stances against, you know, the football program and has said things that athletic director Mitch Barnhart has not liked. So it's, you know, there, he's alienated some people there. And then you kind of throw this, the upset this year, the upset mm-hmm. at St. Peter's, you can kind of just see things. There's going to be money people that are going to say, hey, we have enough money. If we really want to fire him, we can do it. And so I do think that there is a chance that he's coached his last game at Kentucky. Again, I don't think it's likely, but I think there's definitely a chance that his time in Lexington is over.
Yeah. It's interesting you brought up the Mitch Barnhart backing Mark Stoops over John Calipari. Because I think when we look back at Cal's tenure, however it ends, whether soon or much later, I thought that was a pretty important mile marker. Because 4 years prior to that, and that was in summer of 2022, there was a series of back and forths about Kentucky being a football school, not being a football school. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but basically the athletic director, Mitch Barnhart, who says very little publicly, and is not a he's a calculated guy, and he's a lay low, don't make the big mistake guy. And him going out and backing Mark Stoops, who, by the way, has done a wonderful job there, was one of those moments where you're like, whoa, he's going with Kentucky's like generally successful and overachieving football coach over their Hall of Fame and typically superlatively successful basketball coach. It was just a little bit one of those things where you're like, this indicates where the wind is blowing a little bit. So in the basketball world, a lot of our listeners, Jeff, are football folks, though we have plenty of basketball fans too. There is, of course, like, look, Texas A&M would pick its teeth with a $33 million buyout. That's just like, this is like a buyout appetizer. What's the real buyout? What is that number? You deal in these coaches' contracts constantly. What does that number mean when you look down the barrel at $33 million?
I mean, as far as I know, it would be the most that a basketball program has owed their coach to fire him. Now, it's not one, they don't have to write a $33 million check tomorrow to fire him. He's owed that over the length of his contract, which makes it a little more palatable. But at the end of the day, it's still, he's owed $33 million to fire him. And at some point, they're going to have to pay that. Now, there's an offset in there where if he gets another job, then, you know, they wouldn't have to pay him that, which is, I don't know where he would go right now. But, you know, if there was an opportunity for him to go somewhere and make $6, $7, $8 million, I'm sure that might make Kentucky's decision a little bit easier. But I don't see that as overly viable right now. So I do think they'd be on the hook for the majority of that 33. And the other part of it is, it's not just the money they have to pay him. And we'll get to some of the candidates shortly, but a lot of them are going to have eight-figure buyouts. And so you're throwing that on top of whatever you owe Cal. Then you're throwing on a salary, which if you're going to Kentucky, you're probably going to demand, you know, $7 million, $6 to $7 million. And so then you got to pay the staff. You're going to have to fund some sort of NIL. I don't think a lot of guys are going anywhere now without, you know, at least promises for NIL funds. You're talking a huge, huge payday. Even if it's not 33 up front, you're still talking $20+ million in kind of, you know, short order. And that's still a lot of money, especially on the basketball side. You mentioned Texas A&M. There's been big buyouts in football. We generally don't see that sort of thing in basketball. I mean, we saw a little bit with Vanderbilt and Jerry Stackhouse, but sure, it's not a, you know, we're not seeing every year, we're not seeing 20 million plus buyouts being paid to fire coaches.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So I think there's one place in this cycle that could hire John Calipari. But I really think, you know, it would be a wondrous marriage of desperation and opportunism, right? Like SMU has the money. Like they could pay him $12 million. They could pay him $20 million. I mean, they basically got a bunch of guys together in the room at the country club and they threw in the hat to like pay 10 years of rights fees to go to the ACC for free, right? So like that is like these are billionaires with a B and David Miller at the front of the line with them. And how is the SMU job viewed right now? I guess they fired Rob Lanier, a very good coach who won 20 games this year. And it was a little jarring to see. It's like, whoa, you know, like, and I think that's sort of the blind ambition that SMU shows. But like, how is that job viewed as a basketball job? It's had some dollops under Larry Brown, but I don't know if it's ever been viewed as like a juggernaut job.
Yeah. I mean, it's when they fired Rob Lanier last week, I mean, the calls I got were kind of surprising in terms of guys that would be interested in the job. It's viewed, I mean, obviously it's in a good city in Dallas, which is a fertile recruiting area. You can recruit pretty much all of Texas. They have a ton of money, as you mentioned, great resources, good NIL in theory. And
they've been NIL for a while before it was called that, as the 30 for 30s have taught us. So
and they're going to the ACC. So some of the negatives that they had before this coming summer are not going to be there anymore. And the ACC, they're having a great tournament, but I think it's still viewed by a lot of coaches as a league where you can come in and you can still compete and finish top half in that league pretty quickly. And so there's going to be guys that want that job, guys that are at sitting power five high major programs right now, they're going to be interested in that job. And again, they can pay a lot and they have the resources and the funding to kind of keep this thing going. I mean, the facilities are great. I mean, Rob Lanier won 20 games this past season and SMU said this is not good enough. And so it seems to me, I mean, especially based on what the AD said when they fired him, they basically said, hey, we're going into the ACC. We want to get a heavy hitter to come in and we think we should be competing with the best of the best. And this is our chance to.
Do you think Cal would leave without getting fired? Because 33, like he earned that lifetime contract, and it, again, he could potentially equal his pay, I'm sure, at SMU. But do you think his ego would allow him to just leave Kentucky in a lurch, in a hailstorm of Jack Gokey threes?
I say no. I think, do I think he's incredibly happy there right now? Probably not. I mean, especially with the way that the fans are treating him. But I think his ego would say, I don't want to go out like the way I went out. Mm-hmm. And also, I believe that my way works. Mm-hmm. And I want to show the Kentucky fans that my way can work. You know, he showed that he's flexible with playing style. I mean, this year they were playing faster and shooting threes and kind of took the shackles off offensively. Can he be flexible in terms of roster construction? And I don't know if he wants to be, but if he does, then I think he would rather show Kentucky fans, hey, I can do it here, as opposed to starting fresh at SMU, if he's willing to change.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating. We were talking earlier today, Jeff, and there are some similarities to John Calipari and Jim Harbaugh.
Yep.
They tend to wear out their welcome, and cloud storms tend to follow them. Obviously, we saw it with Calipari at UMass. We saw it with Calipari at Memphis. There are no storm clouds now, you know, as he would be quick to point out. They were all in Louisville recently more than they were at Kentucky. But he is, like, I think they're similar in the way that they're singular forces, and they are people that don't often play well with others, don't sometimes play well with bosses. And I mean, like Harbaugh, like, they couldn't wait to get rid of him with the 49ers. Guy had the highest winning percentage in the entire NFL during the 4 years he was there, and they couldn't wait. Like, they were giddy to get rid of him. Now, I don't think John is that divisive, but I think John Calipari can wear you down. And I feel like that's where the Kentucky money people, administrators, fan base is with him right now. There's just, you know, it's just a little bit of the same tired stuff. And the performances, quite frankly, have all been, I think, similar, right? It's been
right. I mean, if he was making these demands or these comments about NIL and facilities and things like that when they were going to Final Fours and going to Elite Eights and winning 30 games, I think there's a different reaction. When you're getting knocked out of the tournament by 14 and 15 seeds, and then you're complaining about NIL and you're complaining about facilities and you're complaining about what football has compared to you, it just, there's an incredibly different reaction to it. And it's obviously, it's negative. And like you said, the money people are going to say, you can't make these demands when you're putting up, you know, first round exits every year in the tournament.
Scott Frost summed up his demise better than any coach I can ever remember, the old Nebraska coach. They kept losing these close games, and he called it the same movie. He's like, we're seeing the same movie. And I feel like with Kentucky, we've seen the same movie as these seasons have ended. And, you know, it hasn't only been the NCAA tournament, too. They've been awful in the SEC tournament the past couple of years. They haven't done well in the postseason. If this was college football, Jeff, they would fire the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. And to save the buyout money and bring in the generally, to keep the generally successful coach there for a little while longer. If there are staff changes, do you think Cal would be open to them? Because those dudes have been sitting on his bench for a long time. And that's just not like La Familia. La Familia ain't, you know, ain't hitting one of your own, right? And that's what would have to happen, be it an Antigua, Chuck Martin, a Bruiser Flint, somebody like that. Now, there's a little bit of new blood on there, but do you think that is like we're going to come back with a plan to show our fan base that this isn't the same movie? Do you think that's a needle thread that's available here?
I think so. And I think Cal would have to be, you know, open to that. And they, you're allowed to have five assistant coaches now on the side, which could make it a little bit easier. And you don't have to get rid of, you know, your whole staff. You can get rid of one or two, bring in some fresh blood and kind of refresh things. And so, you know, again, I think if they're going to say, hey, you have to refresh your staff or you're getting fired, I feel like he would rather refresh his staff than get fired. Again, he's going to make money either way, because if he gets fired, he's getting a job soon. But I think he'd rather do it at Kentucky.
Yeah. Thinking of him in the landscape this year, there were some overlays thematically to Bill Belichick on the landscape, right? Because everyone's like, oh, Belichick will get a job. Well, problem with Belichick is he came, you know, he's complicated. He'd want some kind of personnel voice, perhaps, right? Like, he's probably not going to be there for a long time, perhaps. So it limited his pool, who he was almost, the gravitas and the success limited his pool in some ways, right? Like, he wouldn't take like a rebuilding job, you know, yeah, at a lesser franchise. So I do think with John Calipari, it's interesting. Like, it's not like he can go to 40 programs, right? Like,
and he's also 65. I mean, there's going to be programs that are going to say, you know, we want to hire a 48-year-old or, you know, somebody on up and coming. And again, as you mentioned, Cal is, if he's not happy with something, he's going to let it be known. Mm-hmm. And not every program is going to want to deal with that. It's just, you know, there's a lot that comes with the Calipari experience, and you're going to get five-star recruits and you're probably going to win 25 games more often than not, but there's going to be, you know, personality stuff that's not always going to mesh with his bosses.
How could he construct rosters better?
Just get older. I mean, you know, part of the appeal of him is I'm going to go get five-star recruits and we're going to get top three recruiting classes every year.
And have it's a combine.
Right. Show exactly. It on ESPN. Yeah. And he's saying, you know, look at the money that our guys have made in the NBA. Now, I mean, especially when teams are, you know, I don't, he said everyone's 24 and 25, which is a bit of a stretch, but.
Oh, yeah. He's been known to exaggerate slightly.
Kentucky fans don't want to see, oh, Devin Booker made $300 million in the NBA. He's a success at Kentucky. They want to see him score 20 a game and go to a Final Four. That's the success for them. They don't, you know.
They don't want to see him on the bench against Wisconsin when their perfect season's getting.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to want to see wins now. They're not going to want to wait 10 years for a guy to be on his third contract and be like, you know what? He was a success at Kentucky when he won, you know, 22 games and got knocked out in the first round. So he's going to have to get older. And he could still do the freshman thing because, again, that's part of his appeal. And, you know, I think he likes the fact that, oh, I got this five-star and he went to the NBA, was a lottery pick and made a bajillion dollars. You're not really going to get that in the portal all that often. Mm-hmm. But he's going to have to be open to, let's start four guys that have been in the program that have been around college basketball, start maybe one freshman, and then, you know, just have some sort of continuity in the program. You know, when you get seniors and a couple, I mean, and the other part is the two best players they had on the floor in the Oakland game were Trey Mitchell and Antonio Reeves, two transfers that in a different world are not on this Kentucky team, because Trey Mitchell was a late addition after Bob Huggins got fired from West Virginia.
He's actually 37.
He might be. In Calipari years, he's 37. And Antonio Reeves, I mean, he was rumored to want to leave a lot of the offseason last year. So there was a chance that those guys weren't even there. And he's going to have to go get more guys like that. You can get your Reed Shepherds and your Dillinghams and your DJ Wagners, two of those, three of those, and then kind of develop them as the season goes on. It's really hard to play four to five freshmen, even against Oakland. And we saw Oakland's got dudes, they got old guys that have played together for a while. And in this day and age, it's just harder and harder to do it with, you know, guys that have played together for 4 months. And the other part is the trade-off this year was, hey, we're going to play fast. We're going to play fast because we have all these freshmen. The defense was atrocious. Ooh. And like, again, it's when you have 18-year-olds that have played together for 3 months, defense is not going to be there. And, you know, he's got to have some sort of continuity and he has to get older. Those are the two things. Again, he showed flexibility in his style. Can he do it with the roster also? And just the comments after the game where he said, you know, maybe we go to the portal. We got a great class coming in. We'll see what happens. Maybe we don't have to go in the portal. It just didn't give me a ton of optimism that he's ready to kind of transform his roster theories.
Yeah. PR 101, when you're in the middle of like a meltdown, is acknowledge the mistake, take blame for the mistake, and then have a plan to fix the mistake.
He didn't exactly do that.
Yeah. His was like passively acknowledge the failures. Maybe I'll fix it. Maybe I won't. Yeah. And it did it all very upbeat too, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, like, hey, college basketball's gotten older. It's like, well, okay. Like,
yeah.
I should realize this a few years ago.
Yes. No, it was very interesting epiphany. So we're going to close the Kentucky Cal portion of this by me saying practice starts in October. Who is running the Kentucky program? If it's Cal, how are they different?
I think it's Cal. And I think this has to be mentioned, is that you take the money part out of it, the $33 million and all the money that he's owed and all that. There's not a ton of viable replacements. And I think this is what people are forgetting, where you just say, you know, if this was 10 years ago, if you're Kentucky, you fire Cal, you could probably get the top five coaches in the country and they're all want to come to Kentucky. You can get them for cheap and they'll be in Lexington. No problem. Now these guys have humongous buyouts. And I think the gap has closed, you know, from an NIL perspective, from a recruiting perspective. You know, I don't, like, Nate Oates can look at Alabama and say, what can't I do at Alabama that I can do at Kentucky? Yeah. And, you know, Oates is not coming anyway. Just signed a new contract. He's got $18 million buyout. And that's TJ Otzelberger, $17 million buyout. Tommy Lloyd just signed a new contract. You know, Danny Hurley just not coming. Like, he's not leaving
UConn. Mark Few not coming.
Right. You go down the list, you know, like, even guys that maybe 3 years ago would have been names, Musselman, Sean Miller, Mick Cronin, they're all coming off bad years. Bruce Pearl, 64. And also, if one of your complaints is that Calipari hasn't been past the first weekend of the tournament since 2019, guess who else hasn't been past the first weekend since 2019? Bruce Pearl. So it's just, Scott Drew, he just kind of made a big show of turning down Louisville to come back to Baylor. And if he doesn't get a new contract out of that, which he probably is, does he really go back on that a week later and say, you know what, I'm actually leaving Baylor, I'm going to Kentucky? It's just, I don't see a real viable option for them unless they want to drop down to a perceived tier two, tier three guy to come to Lexington. And again, Kentucky fans, they want to win, and they still want recruiting classes. They still want to beat Kansas and Duke and Carolina for five-star recruits. So there's just a really thin line that you got to walk as a Kentucky coach, and not all these guys want to deal with that.
And don't underestimate the fact that, like, when Cal got that job, it was sort of the perfect collision mm-hmm. of a job needing a carnival barker and the consummate carnival barker of, you know, our generation in college basketball, right? And so many guys think of, like, Cal, you know, doing all his fantasy camps and doing all that, like, doing all the stuff. Like, Cal did seemingly more off-court stuff than other stuff. And some of it great, by the way. A lot of charitable stuff, like, you know, but that's just, like, the circus of Cal. And he, yes. like, redefined what a circus is as a college basketball coach the last 15 years there. And a vast majority of these guys are like, no way, man. I'm not stepping in and being the ringleader there. I think that's a little bit of why, and we're going to get some of this stuff, why Dusty Way went to Michigan. He's like, you know, I'm just going to coach basketball at Michigan, and they're really not going to bother me for 6 months. I'm not going to be at the gas station, and they're going to be like, how come you haven't offered that 3-star from, you know, Bloomington South yet?
Right.
You know, like, he's just like, I just need some unleaded to get to work.
Right. I mean, Cal, tell it in a incredible job kind of marketing the program when it needed to be marketed. And it became, if you're a good high school player, you're going to Kentucky. That mm-hmm. was it. I mean, Duke and Kentucky split up the top 10 recruits for like 7 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was because of Cal. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, you don't, I mean, I remember like people saying, oh, why can't they go after Jay Wright? Like when he was at Villanova, I remember him telling me, I don't want another job. I like being able to coach my team. I can go out to dinner in Philly with my family and my kids. And I don't have 10 people asking for autographs and photos. I go out to dinner. We go home. That's it. Like Lexington, you're not doing that. Like if he leaves his house, he's getting hounded for pictures. Like it's just, it's a different job and it's not for everyone.
Yeah. I did think you made a good point here before we kind of close this and transition to other Commonwealth of Kentucky situations in meltdown, that Kentucky basketball and Alabama basketball 20 years ago, there was a huge difference,
right?
But just with this avalanche of money from the SEC, from the SEC network, from ESPN, from the CFP, like Mississippi State is like a pretty darn good basketball right. job. Like, you know, if the resources are marshaled there in the athletic department, you should be able to compete. You should be able to do all that stuff that you allegedly need to do to compete, fly private and, you know, have every bell and every whistle, and every bell and whistle can have their own bell and whistle. And you can be just fine in there. Just money's changed the game. And an elite job you can craft around a coach, and give Greg yep. Byrne credit for locking up Nate Oates. He found a guy who's pretty darn good, right? And he's rolled with him and made sure that no one else is going to get him. And the buyout point you made, Jeff, was great. I mean, Mick Cronin's name would be floating around. It's $20 million. Right. You're not going to pay $20 million. Never mind taxes and dead money and all that stuff that would go along with it.
That would be owed in one shot. Not like the buyout to fire Cal. I mean, to buy out a coach, you're paying that basically in one shot.
It varies, plus, and you can negotiate it.
Taxes like, are another point that you mentioned. I mean, it's just these are incredible amounts of money.
Yeah. And so My parting shot on it is this. If they do fire John Calipari, they better have a plan.
Yep.
Because you could end up with a, for all his postseason failures, there's a lot of good there in the, you know, yeah, in there. And you could end up in a much, in fact, statistically, you're probably going to end up with a worse coach, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, it just, so you better have a plan, because if Kentucky flails around in one of these searches and flops around, like, that's bad ball, because every eyeball in the sport is going to be on them. So it's a pretty, that's a pretty tough line to tightrope, to have a coach at Kentucky lined up before you fire a coach to pay him $33 million to go away. That would be, that would be some AD and Mitch.
And I keep seeing they should call Billy Donovan. And it's like, A, he has not shown any interest in coming out to college for years. The Bulls are currently in the play-in tournament. So the earliest his season would end is April 20th or April 19th. Is Kentucky really firing Cal tomorrow and say, you know what, let's let the portal sit for a month, and then we'll bring Billy in, and then he'll save the day. It's just, I really don't know if there's a real viable option that people are going to say, ooh, Kentucky can do that. That's a great decision. It just seems like a lot of guys that can't get out of their contracts or are not good enough or wouldn't say yes. And it seems like there's probably 15 of those before you get to somebody that seems like a good fit and is viable financially. It's like you said, I mean, you can't fire him and then kind of mess up this hire or, you know, get turned down by five or six guys. It's just, it's the preeminent job when it comes to attention and popularity. And, you know, it's Mitch Barnhart's got a tough decision to make, and I don't see him doing it.
Yeah. There's a lot of roadblocks in front of him. I don't think it's impossible, but it would take a pretty good sized bake sale out there on the front lawn. You know, you got to sell a lot of donuts and pastries and you'd have to have like full alignment. It'd be an interesting test of where Cal is with the money people, right? Like, has he alienated them with the football comments and with the griping and with the, you know, when he loses in the tournament and they'll go get another contract extension? Like, there was always this, like, every low moment he needed to be hugged. And it seems like he's exhausted some goodwill there. How much? We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, another place they could use some goodwill to transition on is Louisville.
Speaking of flailing out in their searches. Yeah.
Yes. Which is at a interesting crossroads. As you mentioned, Scott Drew decided not to go there. Of course, if Bryce Drew had a better last 4 minutes, maybe he could have emerged as the hot candidate there. Grand Canyon, it looks like they're going to lose to Alabama after playing them quite tough for 36 minutes. And obviously Dusty May had the opportunity to go to Louisville, chose Michigan. Where do thy Cardinal go, Jeff Borzello?
It's there's not a lot of names floating around, and this was it feels like Louisville was caught a little flat-footed on this one. And very publicly also. I mean, they clearly made a public pursuit of Scott Drew, didn't get him, and then made a public pursuit of Dusty May and didn't get him. And so, you know, the lack of a plan C, or at least a perceived plan C, has been pretty evident. The one name floating around right now is Pat Kelsey from Charleston. Mm-hmm. I like him. I think he would be a good hire. I think he has the energy to kind of reignite the program.
Good basketball coach too.
Right. Would that appease the Louisville fan base, which is sort of in meltdown mode ever since they lost maybe their top option to Michigan? That's kind of the only name really floating around. I mean, you hear a little bit of Amir Abdur-Rahim and Jeanine Holloway. I think, you know, Will Wade could find himself in the mix at some point. They can go a million different directions, and it just doesn't seem like Josh Hurd, the athletic director, has had kind of a tiered list of, if this guy says no, we go to this guy. It does seem like they maybe take a breather and kind of reassess their candidates. But right now it seems like Pat Kelsey is maybe the top guy on the board.
So here's our like sort of podcast conundrum question. Is Louisville a better basketball job than Michigan?
So I polled a handful of agents, and this was when Ohio State was also open.
Okay.
And so I maybe 10 or 12 agents and coaches and kind of industry people. Louisville got the most first place votes as the best job of the three.
Interesting.
Right. I thought that was very interesting. But a couple of people made the point. Even people that picked Louisville said there's a large contingent of coaches that do not want to be in any league but the Big Ten or the SEC moving forward. It's the most financially secure, your league is secure, there's your future is pretty is on solid footing. And the I think the ACC is fine for now, but there is, you know, there's questions. What's going to happen to Louisville? Where's Louisville in 5 years? We don't really know. And I think that does scare away some people. But again, it's still, you know, when you kind of go down the checklist of what makes a good job, Louisville still would be ahead of Ohio State and Michigan in the eyes of a lot of people in the industry. And the fact that they have not got their preferred target twice now, it's, you know, I think it goes back a little bit to, you know, you mentioned the SEC football money, and the Big Ten also has football money. The ACC is not quite there right now. And, you know, if you're not in one of the power two, you know, your future and what Louisville looks like 5-10 years from now, we just don't really know.
So we make a lot of jokes on this podcast. And
one of our running jokes is that Reese Davis, Southern gentleman that he is so nice. If he's ever going to criticize someone, he says two nice things first. So I'm going to say that I think Louisville's a fantastic basketball job. I think they have a great arena. I think they have great infrastructure, great tradition, right? It's one of the five winningest programs. I mean, it's like there's a lot of awesome things about Louisville. That said, I think about everything that's happened in the last week. Like that awful Virginia-Colorado State game was like 6 days ago. Like that. So in the last week, we have had the college football playoff introduced. We have had Clemson's lawsuit to get out of the ACC. And then we've had this sort of blitzkrieg of wonderful NCAA games, which we will talk about eventually, by the way. And I really think that, and I said this a little bit on our Wednesday pod, but I really think that Monday, which seems like it was, you know, 6 months ago, will be remembered as a pivotal day in the history of college athletics, because that's the day, obviously, that the CFP deal comes and it codified the financial disparity between the SEC and Big Ten and everybody else. And it is also the same day. And God, this might've been Tuesday. I may have my day mixed up. Oh, it was Tuesday. Then you had Clemson obviously filing the lawsuit with the Big Ten, which came on the same day. So the, you know, long story short, like that to me is like the fork in the road where everything changed. And there was a much better argument for Louisville over Michigan, which is a close and it's a good debate, right? Like it's the reason why you did that in the article and polled those people was because you think you're going to, you don't do a poll where it's going to be 12-0, right? Like you knew it was going to be, you know, divided answers. And I really think that like 5 years from now, we won't look at that as much of a question. Now, I'm certainly not saying the ACC is going to imminently, you know, disband or anything like that, but there's certainly just two searing signs that that league is going to be drastically different, or the bell cows of that league want it to be different. Now, whether that will be or not, we'll see. But that's essentially where that is right now. You know, a lot of people got glee to poking at Greg Sankey for his comments to ESPN about the future of the tournament and expansion in this week. And certainly they've earned the right to poke. And I'm not commenting on that as much as my thought this week as I watched this is all to be like financial distribution in many ways becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like if you are getting more money, you are going to get better players, right? Like there's a reason why the Dodgers are usually better than the Royals. Now the Royals can come up and win the World Series like they did a couple years ago and good for them. But for the most part, if you have the highest payroll, you're going to put forth the best teams. And so while in the tournament's been great, right? Like it's been awesome to watch. I do wonder if, you know, it's been interesting that Sankey storyline has sort of remained in the backdrop, literally amongst these like seismic shifts where we are, which would indicate at least on a financial way that, and again, I'm not saying it's the SEC and Big Ten are going to come down. Big Ten hasn't won the national title since 2000. SEC obviously struggled in this tournament. But there's those programs are going to be better because the better coaches are going to go there. You know, the $600,000 assistant coach is going to have a hard time staying at Iowa State now. And I'm just throwing that as an example. I have no idea. I'm going to see some guy in the locker room and he's going to be like, man, I wish I made 600 grand in Boston this weekend.
People are going to think you're reporting that an Iowa State assistant might be leaving for the SEC.
Yeah. But like I'm all hypothetical. It's just going to be harder to keep talent. It's like in business, right? When, you know, Apple pulled, when the iPhone pulled away from the Android they could probably afford the best engineers, right? So then the iPhone kept getting better. And that's probably a clunky analogy. But the point is, there are now 34, right? 18 and 16. Yeah. In those two leagues. And they have now, how much of that money is funneled to basketball is a legit question, because that's different everywhere else. But I really think from the big picture, when we're talking about a place like Louisville, proud tradition, awesome history, like, you know, great eras and runs, awesome scandals too, by the way. It's really been a great, entertaining college basketball program all the way through. It's just going to be harder to do that. Now, I do this as UConn is, you know, beat Northwestern by 100 on my TV tonight. And so it is not going to happen overnight. And it's not just immediately going to arrive this way. But I think you're naive if you don't think the trend lines are pointing that way.
Yeah. And the other thing about Louisville, in addition to all that, is you're taking over a program in the absolute doldrums. I mean, they're down there with Cal and DePaul over the last 3-4 years, whatever. Like, it is in rough shape. The fan base is like incredibly apathetic, or has become that way. And now that you are not Scott Drew or Dusty May, who most of the fan base seem to want, you're going to have to now win them over, and you're going to have to reignite the fan base. You're going to have to fill up the Yum Center. You're basically going to have to rebuild an entire roster, because everyone's either transferring or not good enough. And it's just, I mean, you're taking that job. And again, the people are saying, oh, they should take a swing at Oates and Shaka and all these guys. Like, those guys are not leaving for a total rebuild in a place they haven't been, with a fan base that right now needs like some convincing to come back into the fold. It's an uphill climb for whoever takes that job. Again, it can be a great job, and it has been a great job. And on the surface, it's still probably a top 10, top 12 job if you ask people to rank them, but it's got some work to do to get back to that level.
Could Rick Pitino come back?
I say no. I mean, I think that's a Louisville like fever dream. I think that would make everyone happy, but it seems a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah. Money and desperation can, you know, be a pretty powerful collision.
Billy Donovan at Kentucky and Rick Pitino back at Louisville. Like, let's get that rivalry going again.
Yeah. I'd watch that Netflix special.
Crazier things have happened. Maybe That's, not actually. I take that back.
Yeah. I've never got the sense that Billy really is dying to go back. Like, and you know, people always bring up Brad Stevens, right? Like, all these guys that have been in the NBA for a while, man. Whew. Like,
I mean, they got tired of the recruiting back before NIL. I mean, they didn't want to deal with that stuff anymore. And now it's 10 times. Well, for some guys, it's better and more fun and whatever. It's 10 times worse than it was then. If you didn't like recruiting then, you would absolutely, you know, abhor recruiting at this point.
Yeah, no, it is. They are beautiful games and terrible businesses. Right.
Yeah.
Like college football is the same way. College basketball is the same way. Let's sort of rapid fire through some of these jobs here. And we touched on SMU. We didn't finish. They have money. They have ambition, and they have money. Who can they hire?
I mean, like I said before, I think it's a job of interest to a lot of Power Five guys. I mean, like, I think you'll see Eric Musselman involved, or at least interested in it. You'll see Chris Jans from Mississippi State linked to it. Buzz Williams has been a name thrown at me. The one name that is kind of floating around the past couple of days has been Andy Enfield at USC.
Interesting.
He's a guy that people kind of earmarked a couple of months ago as, hey, maybe I can get – if I can get a spot somewhere else, maybe I'd go there. And he just had a pretty bad season with what was the number one recruit in the country. He had Bronny James. Maybe he just wants a fresh start. You know, there's going to be USC fans that are saying, hey, he disappointed with an incredibly talented roster, and maybe they put him on – the hot seat in a year or two, and he'll say, hey, I don't want to deal with that. Let me go get a ton of money, a new 5 or 6 year contract from SMU, and be happy. So that's a name that's kind of been floating around, but
it's been there a long time, right, Jeff? It's like 12, 13 years.
Yeah. Longer. I mean, he was hired. I want to say he was hired the same time Alford was hired at UCLA.
Yeah, he was hired right in the wake of the Dunk City.
Yes. Yes. And that was 2011, 12. I should know this. 2013. All right, I'm off. So he's still been there 11 years.
Yeah. That's like, you know, that's two lifetimes in this business.
Yeah.
Like, you just, so, if you make it past six, like, you know, they should throw you a party. So.
And I think that's the kind of guy that they're going to have to. I mean, again, you don't fire Rob Lanier after winning 20 games and then go hire someone that's, you know, a mid-major name or something like that. You go after a kind of a heavy hitter. And it seems like that's kind of their target demographic right now.
What can they pay? Like, is that on the street right now? Like, can they pay $6 million? Could they pay Calipari $10 million?
Like, I think they could. I mean, okay. I think they could go up as high as they want. I mean, it sounds. I mean, again, the names that I just threw around, the Enfields and the Buzzes, mm-hmm. and Musselman, they're all making four-ish.
Yeah,
like they're gonna have to pay, you know, a competitive salary of 4 or 5 if they want to. And again, I mean, Dusty May's only making 3.7, and I think they're gonna have to pay more than that to get a guy of that level.
Musselman would fit there in a lot of ways because he's got a bit of a Carnival Barker to him. You know what I mean? The same term I use for Cal. Like, he'll take his shirt off, and you know what I mean? Like, there is a showman to him, and that's a place that doesn't have a ton of history. It doesn't have a fan base. Like, their football program has been very successful. If you look at their games, like, there's nobody there. Right. Like, it's just
He'll get people there. Muss will get people there.
Yeah,
And I mean, I think that's kind of got to be a prerequisite for whoever gets that job. I mean, you know, if the expectations are we're going to be competing with the best of the best, mm-hmm. You know, getting a, you know, student section, getting a sold out crowd, that's part of competing at the top.
Sure. Yeah. And Enfield, who's been a generally successful coach, is not bad. He has this like wild story, but he's a generally pretty charmless guy. Like, he's pretty straightforward. Like, he's not the kind of guy who's going to like go on at 6 radio shows in the morning and go to the fraternity houses. And if he does, it would be against his general personality. He's a little bit of a blander, introverted guy. He doesn't really have that showman in him, which is why he's been a head coach in LA for 11 years and is relatively anonymous. Like, still the first thing you think about with Andy Enfield is Dunk City at Florida Gulf Coast. Like, there's good not point. They've been good at USC, and they've been better than at USC historically. They made some dunderhead hires at USC over the years, the Henry Bibbies, and they brought back Kevin O'Neill. Like, they've just sort of, you know, fumbled that job left and right in a lot of ways, and he's kind of got it in that fairway. He's done a good job. So that's SMU just sort of like buying its way into the mix is like fascinating. Yeah. Right. It's let's go on to the job that just filled Sunday night, West Virginia. For our West Virginia Mountaineer fans, what are they getting in Darren DeVries?
He's a guy who is, you know, he's had as much success in the past 4 years as any program in the country outside of Houston, pretty much. I mean, there's a stat that this was entering, I think, the final week of the season, and only two programs have won at least 25 games the last 4 years, and it was Houston and Drake. And that just kind of shows what DeVries has done. And he obviously is bringing his son Tucker with him, the two-time Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year. But he had success before Tucker got there. I just think he's a really good coach. He has a ton of experience at the high major level. He was an assistant at Creighton. Mm-hmm. So I think he'll be able to recruit. I think he'll be able to get players. You know, West Virginia, last summer at least, they had a ton of NIL to give to guys in the portal. If that continues, he's already starting with his son. That's a pretty good piece to build around. You go out and you get guys in the portal. And again, I think they can compete pretty quickly if they make the right decisions in the portal. They didn't do that last year. They paid a lot of money to a lot of players that didn't fit. So I think DeVries is good. I mean, he was on the list at Michigan. If Dusty had said no, he was somewhere on the list. He talked to Oklahoma State. He talked to Vanderbilt. I mean, he was a guy that 3 or 4 schools really wanted this cycle. And from that perspective, I think West Virginia, they moved pretty early on him. I mean, he was near the top of their board for weeks now. Mm-hmm. And so I think they kind of jumped the line or were at the head of the line for him the past couple of days. And I think it's a pretty good hire.
Yeah, I was looking at DeVries' record last couple of days. 6 straight 20-win seasons, 4 straight 25-plus, 3 NCAA tournaments in the last 4 years. That's a lot. You know, that's a backbone of success. You know,
it's at a place that, you know, wasn't competing for tournaments all that often. It's in a good league, and you know, he's really taken that job or that school up to a you know, a consistent competitor at the top of the league, which had not been done at Drake in forever.
We will go now to Oklahoma State, a funny job where it is now. I contend that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, Oklahoma State was a rocking basketball environment. It had a ton of great players, had a ton of tradition. I really think that the arrival of the NBA in Oklahoma coincided with a dip in basketball, both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, quite frankly. But it feels like the environment at Gallagher Iba, it doesn't have the same juice it used to. You know, you got a much better and much bigger Big 12, a little less regional. How good of a job is Oklahoma State right now? I know they've had some NIL struggles. Mike Gundy's general reticence towards NIL, I think, has permeated that athletic department a little bit. Just how good of a job is this right now, Jeff?
I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, a little longer than that. I mean, like Eddie Sutton was there. It was a great job. I mean, it was, you know, top half Big 12 job probably. And now it's just, it's not. They have not had any real success since Eddie Sutton was there. I mean, that's five coaches ago.
Five coaches.
Yeah. I mean, they had Sean Sutton. They had four. They had Brad Underwood for a year. And then they had Mike Boynton. Yeah. They have not been out of the first weekend of the tournament since Eddie Sutton in 2005. Yeah, so it's been a while. And again, you mentioned the NIL issues. And it's publicly kind of talking about Mike Boynton kind of publicly complained about it a little bit. That's going to be something that coaches are going to have to ask them. Now, this is also a job where, in theory, it has money to spend and it has resources and things like that and donors to – I mean, they bought out Mike Boynton. That was about $700 million or so.
You probably bought a pretty good roster for them out there, paying Mike.
Right. So, you know, if they put money into the program, which from what I've been told and what I've heard, that's kind of a talking point for them in this search, that they're going to have some money to spend on NIL. If that's there, you know, and you can get Gallagher Iba back rocking again, it's not a bad job, but it's not what it was 10, 15 years ago. I mean, if you're kind of ranking the available jobs, you're probably putting Washington ahead of Oklahoma State at this point, which you would not have done 15 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair point. Let's go to Washington since you brought it up. Where are the Huskies right now? They're down an AD and a coach. Where do they move and how quick?
Danny Sprinkle has been kind of the name that's been floating around for pretty much before Mike Hopkins was let go down the stretch of the regular season and obviously finished out the season. But Sprinkle's been the guy. I still think he's probably in good shape there, even though, as you mentioned, they don't have an athletic director. Troy Dana left for Nebraska a week ago. I'm still under the impression that Sprinkle's the guy. And you know, he won a tournament game before getting blown out on Sunday by Purdue. But, you know, he's done a tremendous job at Montana State, now at Utah State, three straight tournaments, first outright Mountain West title, regular season title at Utah State, first tournament win for the program since, I want to think, 2001. So he's a, wow. I mean, yeah.
Stu Morrill?
I think so. All right. What a pull by you. Yeah, so I mean, it's a good hire. He was a guy that, you know, like DeVries, he was involved in a couple of different searches, and I think Washington kind of, you know, made him the focus pretty well in advance in order to avoid him kind of slipping somewhere else.
A couple of people have asked me the last few days, well, do you think the AD leaving will affect, you know, Danny Sprinkle's candidacy? I was like, well, if somebody offered you three times your salary, and I'm just making up that number, by the way, but typically a Mountain West $1 million salary to a Big Ten $3 million salary is just a basic jump. But I legit don't know what he was making or what he would make. But it's probably 2.5x. Like, that's a safe estimate. So, you know, I would jump into the unknown for 2.5 times my salary if offered. I don't know about you, Jeff. I don't know how much you value your bosses if you want the security of knowing who they are.
Yeah, and on the other side, it feels like, and I mean, you know, Troy Dannon better than I do, I think, but I don't feel like he would leave them in a lurch saying, you know, I'm going to fire the guy and then not be around to hire his replacement. I think he did a lot of groundwork and legwork on Danny Sprinkle to kind of leave the search in good shape at least.
Yeah, the feeling is that it is still headed that way. By the time folks are listening to this, there may be some official clarity on that. I believe Danny Sprinkle's father played football at Washington, so which is like one of those nuggets. Usually in college football, he has a beach house near there. So like, oh yeah, he's got a beach house on 30A, so he's going to want the Florida State job.
And basketball always seems to be like a father-in-law lives in that town. That always seems to be. Oh, father-in-law's got a lot of say in that one. It's like, okay, yeah. Seems to pop up every now and then.
Well, whose father-in-law lives near Nashville?
I don't know. I mean, that's another one I think we should have some movement on in the next couple of days. I think that Mark Byington is in, you know, he's a name there that we've been hearing pretty heavily, and I don't think he hurt his candidacy by beating Wisconsin the other day in the first round of the tournament. He's done a tremendous job, 31 wins, 32 wins. This
yeah, 32.
Season.
Duke was. I'm sorry. Yeah. Wisconsin was 32. Duke would have been 33. Didn't quite happen.
Didn't happen. But I think, you know, he did a tremendous job. And
hard to win 32 college basketball games.
And they wouldn't have made the tournament without the conference tournament, which a lot of people have pointed out over the past couple of days. But yeah, I mean, it's his first NCAA tournament appearance. But he's got a little bit of high major experience recruiting. Yeah, he was a assistant. I want to say Virginia Tech for a year apiece. So he's been at that level and.
It's a rare double. You get both. Yes,
and it was separate. It was like it was separated by 7 years somewhere else. But yeah, I mean, if he ends up being a guy, I think that's a good hire. I mean, you know, we've heard Amir Abdur-Rahim linked to it. Pat Kelsey's been linked to it. Josh Schertz, who, you know, we reported last week was in talks with St. Louis. So
still talking.
Yeah. So a week later, they're still chopping it up.
You think they won't fill that until, because didn't they make the NIT finals?
Yeah, they won again today.
So yeah, you went two to go to, well, it used to be to go to New York, right? But now you go to Hinkle.
You go to Hinkle. I think next year, maybe you go to Vegas or something. But it feels like when Texas Tech hired Grant McCaslin, the news started breaking at about this time last year, and they kept winning. And I think they won the NIT or made the Final Four. And like it was officially announced like April 5th, and everyone's like, oh, I thought that was announced like two and a half, 3 weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, it seems like Vanderbilt is winding things down along with a few other spots. You know, Washington, we mentioned. Stanford's another one. I think they're probably winding things down. You know, Kyle Smith has been perceived to be the favorite there for, I don't know, months, and you know, led Washington State to first tournament since Tony Bennett, did a great job there. He's had success at San Francisco and at Columbia. So he fits kind of that high academic mold. And, you know, it's an intra-conference move, but in about 3 months, it will not be.
Right. Well, let's quickly look back on the NCAA tournament. What was your favorite moment, Jeff Borzello?
I think my favorite moment would be, I think it was the Colorado Florida ending. I mean, to me, that was the most entertaining game of the, not the best game, but the most entertaining game of the tournament. 102-100, Walter Clayton,
from the parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, he was ridiculous. I think he hit 33 that game. He hit, I don't know, their last 12 points, including, like you said, from the parking lot, about 30 footer to tie it up. And then it won, you know, KJ Simpson's shot with that hit seemingly every part of the rim and then bounced in. That game, I mean, it just the, you know, the swings from one end to the other. Oh, Florida forced overtime. Nope, Colorado's got it. I mean, I love that game. And I think so KJ Simpson's shot would probably be where I stand on my favorite moment.
Yeah, that was one of my least favorite moments because I had Florida going to the Final Four and I was like, they were dead and buried in that game. And then they came back and I got, oh, I could be a genius after all hope. And that was quickly extinguished as it should be. I just refused to pick a Final Four without like some type of outlier in it. So they were my outlier for better, or for worse. Things kind of opened up for them too. As like the day went on, I was like thinking about it, but oh well, they at least gave us they at least got us off the couch one afternoon with a little bit of good ball. Who's your favorite player, your breakthrough player? Like who like just busted out and you got some giddiness watching?
Yeah, I mean I think that Golkey is probably the popular pick.
Who was the dude from Fairleigh Dickinson that beat Kentucky that transferred to Bryant, I think?
Oh, the guy from St. Peter's.
Oh, St. Peter's, yeah. I'm sorry. Doug Eater.
Yeah, Doug Eater. Yeah. He had like he had a mustache. Maybe Golkey could have done like a mustache or something with his hair to maybe get a little more pop. Yeah, the kid from Yale was another one that.
Yes.
Pulakitas?
Yeah. Reese is the pronunciation expert on the pod. I'm going to let you roll.
He had one step back baseline jumper that it seemed to hit the ceiling and come back down. And like, as soon as he shot it, I was like, that's going to be in one shining moment. Like that's the kind of shot that is going to be in it.
Sure.
But I probably stole the two best answers if you had one yourself, but I will say DJ Burns at NC State, not a breakthrough guy. He's been around. I mean, he's played in the tournament for, he was at Winthrop. He signed with Tennessee out of high school. So he's been around, but
should have been a left guard.
Dude, I mean, he's an incredible passer, unbelievable hands.
Footwork's unbelievable, though.
Right. Yeah. And to me, like the NC State story, I mean, they're an ACC school, so they're not a Cinderella. But you look back on whatever, 13 days ago at this point, they were trailing Louisville at halftime of the first round of the ACC tournament. If they lose that game, there's a chance Kevin Keats is fired the next day. I mean, there was pressure on him. The fan base seemed ready to move on. Like, it wasn't out of the realm of possibility. That could have been his last game as NC State coach. And then they go on to win the ACC tournament, 5 wins in 5 days. They win the first round. They win the second round. They're in the Sweet 16. Keats has a raise. Keats gets an extension. I mean, it's an incredible 2 weeks that really only happens in March in college basketball. And to me, that's just an incredible story that maybe isn't getting enough attention because it's NC State. It's an ACC team, but it's really incredible.
Yeah. Who puts in a contract if you win the ACC tournament? You get what an arbitrary, weird thing to get a 2-year extension off of. If you reach the NCAA tournament, absolutely get extended. Also, if you win your conference, that's probably even a better metric then because you could get lucky and win the conference tournament and not be very good. But that was like, I was like, a contract? I'd never heard of a contract extension tied to a conference tournament victory in my career. I'm sure they exist.
In his original contract, I think I'm almost positive he had a some sort of lever he could pull where if they got hit with NCAA infractions from the previous regime, he could trigger an automatic 2-year extension if he wanted to. And it's like, why would anybody ever say, I don't want that two years added onto my deal?
Well, just the buyout works the other way too, though.
Yeah,
if it
fair.
Was a 2-year extension, you had to pay more to leave.
But yeah, I mean, he's had a couple of different triggers that he's now hit. And he's, I mean, I think he's tied down there until, I don't know, 2028, 2029 at this point. So he's got new life there in Raleigh.
Yeah, and shout out to Casey Morcell, St. John's College high grad, played for my buddy Pat B in there, and Pat's obviously rooting hard for him as Pat battles ALS, so it's been fun to see him really seize the stage at this late point in his career. He's played awesome in, I feel like I've watched NC State so, but like more in the last 10 days than I have in the last 5 years.
Hey, seven wins in 13 days, and all of them pretty much on national TV. Yes. It's hard to avoid them.
Yeah, no, truly, truly awesome. And it's what we talk on the Game Day Pod about Saturday football versus Sunday football. And there are just quintessential college basketball things and a wild conference tournament run that that avalanches into a Sweet 16 crashing. And I do think it's a little fitting as we see Duke in the Sweet 16, and we see Carolina in the Sweet 16 with NC State, as the ACC is at this crossroads. And I think it's fair to say they're certainly, you know, the
judge.
Yes, sure. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Public enemy number two of the ACC.
Yeah, keep those units flowing to, it used to be Greensboro, it's Charlotte now, but keep the units flowing. Yes, there'll be some we're not dead yet quotes coming out of some cavernous gym on Wednesday and Thursday as coaches stump for their league, because coaches do nothing better than stump for their league, even if they don't want to be in it. All right, let's peek ahead a little bit, Jeff, and get a little taste of what we can expect next weekend. I'm going to start in the East. I'm biased. A lot of my game watching has been tailored around. You and I are going to be in Boston covering covering that East regional. I think that Illinois Iowa State game is going to be one of the best games, you know, in the tournament, Sweet 16. Just two dynamic teams that, again, because where they're located, they're not under the radar to college basketball fans, but I think to the general bracket filling, you know, casual fan, they are a little under the radar. What pops about that matchup to you?
It's the number two offense in the country in Illinois versus the number two defense in the country in Iowa State. And, you know, Illinois is playing incredibly well lately. Terrence Shannon and Marcus Domask have been, you know, maybe the best wing duo in the country over the past couple of months. And Iowa State is just going to, I mean, this is what they do to pretty much everyone, including Houston. Just grind them down and make a play in the half court and just make life very, very difficult for them. And I did pick Illinois to win it when the bracket came out. I picked them to beat Iowa State. You know, that's going to be, if they have to do a lot in the half court, I think they're going to have some trouble. But to me, like, that's a fascinating contrast in that game.
Yeah. We're on the clock here. Talkative and undisciplined is one of our podcast monikers, and I feel like I've lived up to that tonight. So I'm just gonna bounce around a little bit. NC State Marquette. I love seeing the emotion from Shaka Smart today. First Sweet 16 for him since 2013. He joins one of two fired Texas coaches in the Sweet 16. Rick Barnes.
Oh yeah, Rick Barnes being another one. Yeah,
who beat Texas to get there. To go, makes you wonder if the problem is the coach or the problem is Texas, you know. How is that matchup with NC State? They finally get the rest, by the way. I was just tired watching them.
I know. I mean, to me, if Marquette, if their guards play the way they did, Tyler Kolick seems to be healthy. I mean, those six games he took off at the end of the regular season, I mean, he was incredible today in the second half, did whatever he wanted against Colorado. And the Cam Jones, you know, he had foul trouble today, but when he was on the floor in the first half, he was lights out. And he's been on an absolute tear the last 10, 11 games of the season. So I think those two guys kind of gives them a chance to beat anybody in the country, including Houston and maybe not UConn. I don't know if anybody can beat them, but to me, it's going to be fat. Like Osa Iguodaro just dealt with Eddie Lampkin of Colorado for 40 minutes. And now he's got to go deal with DJ Burns for 40 minutes. I mean, that's two brutal, like very unique big men, like just space eaters on the inside, different players. I mean, Burns is incredibly skilled that we just talked about. That's going to be tough. I mean, nobody's really come up with an answer to we're going to throw the ball into Burns. You're going to have to triple team him, and he's going to find someone because he's an awesome passer, and we're going to score. Shaka has a few days to figure that out, and I think he will. But I'm intrigued to see what they do to kind of slow him down.
So DJ Burns is probably the one of the five most compelling players who's emerged in the last, you know, the last 2 weeks. Obviously, he's been around, and, you know, he was great for Winthrop. I remember he was in the four when they played Villanova in that first round game. Everyone thought Villanova was going to lose, and then they didn't. What's his, like, professional reality? Like, what can DJ Burns do? My nickel opinion here is that he's not an NBA player. I don't think that's...
Yeah, like, I don't think he is either.
But can he go to, like, Italy and just, like, dominate there? I mean, he has, like, a little European flair to his game, and obviously a great passer. Like, what's his... Should we get somebody to sign him and bring him to camp and try to get him, you know, get him as a left tackle?
I mean, I think he could play in Europe. I mean, he's just too skilled. I mean, in Europe is more of a finesse type of deal. I mean, it's not overly explosive, and it's not the up and down kind of more athletic version of the NBA. I mean, the NBA is obviously incredibly skilled also, but it's just a little bit of a slower game. And again, I mean, I think I don't know if teams are going to run their offense through him like NC State does, but it's hard for me to imagine that he can't make money overseas for several years, kind of doing what he does.
Yeah, no, that's what I assumed. Creighton, Tennessee is a fascinating game, right? You got a program. How many times did Creighton score out of the timeout the other night in Pittsburgh, right? Like, I mean, it just seemed like every time. And Tennessee won despite shooting 4% from the field. I think that was the number.
Yes.
They were just brutal. But give them credit, they found a way to win in a phone booth. What do you like about that matchup, Jeff?
Well, you mentioned the Creighton Oregon double overtime game. To me, like, that was a fascinating kind of tactical. You don't usually see, especially in you don't always see kind of adjustments as they happen. But Oregon did the same exact thing every time for the first like 43 minutes of the game. They just ran a high ball screen with Cousinard and Folly Dante.
Yeah.
And then they would get a basket out of it. And then
they were the only ones who scored the whole second half, and I think first overtime. Yeah.
Yeah. And then McDermott switched it where he had Kalkbrenner kind of double team Cousinard to get the ball out of his hands. And you just kind of saw it happen in real time that they did it for the first time all game twice in a row, and Oregon never really adjusted. So that was fascinating to me, and I think they're gonna have to come up with a way to do something similar against Tennessee, because you know, Dalton Connect is maybe the best guard in the country this season, and if they have the same success that Oregon did in that kind of two-man game, high pick and roll, you know, Creighton's gonna get torched by Connect. But I picked Creighton in the Final Four. I haven't seen anything yet that kind of makes me think that they're gonna lose to Tennessee, but they're gonna have to really figure out what to do on that high pick and roll, or else Connect could go for 40.
Connect to me is the kind of player that Calipari hasn't figured out how to land to balance his roster. Is that fair? Like,
yeah,
you know,
I think he would look at Connect, and you know, he was not, you know, widely perceived as a top three, top five, whatever player in the portal last spring. And I would imagine, you know, Calipari sees, okay, this guy averaged 20 a game on a Northern Colorado team that wasn't that good. You know, he's not going to make it at Kentucky. And honestly, I mean, like, if you're Cal, I'm not sure you're really blaming him for not taking Dalton Connect. But that's the kind of guy that he needs. He needs someone that's been around the block. He's played in college for 4 years. I mean, Connect was a JUCO player before he got to Northern Colorado. He's played it in a bunch of different gyms, at a bunch of different levels, and he's really good. And it's that kind of, like, tested guy would help Kentucky dramatically. But, you know, He's one of the more fascinating. I mean, if he can go for 40 against Creighton and be the, and then 40 against Purdue and be the tournament hero of this year. So I do have Creighton winning, but I'm really fascinated to see what they do with Connect.
Well, I think we're going to wrap up here. Jeff, lovely having you on. We appreciate your great hair and your great insight. Thanks for coming on the College Game Day podcast. Everybody, enjoy the games this weekend. Hopefully, Jeff and I get to we get three good ones here in Boston, and maybe enjoy a cold beverage in between. This is the Game Day podcast. Please subscribe, download wherever you get your podcast, and leave us nice reviews.